Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Paul Douglas, Sunday morning, June 14th, the summer solstice. Coming up next Saturday on the 20th, when the sun is highest in the sky. I feel energized this time of year, all that daylight. It's amazing to me that there's still a stain of twilight on the northwestern horizon as late as 11 o'clock in northern Minnesota. That's pretty cool. It makes up for the dark days, the cold dark days of January, that's for sure. Joining me now, my friend and senior pastor at Westwood Community Church in Chanhassen, Joel Johnson. Joel, thanks for stepping up once again. You doing okay?
Yeah. Doing great. I was just saying it's really great to connect with you and available anytime that it works out. And just hearing your voice and the good work you're doing, it's good to be with you.
Well, thank you. I, you know, like everybody on the radio right now, just feel like I'm sipping from a fire hose. The headlines, many of those headlines are harrowing. And, you know, trying to balance the scary news, the terrifying news with the hopeful news. And you're all about hope. And I'm biased. I mean, Westwood is my church. I love your messages. I find that I unpack your messages during the entire week after Sunday services, and so I'm not kissing up when I say that I really appreciate your spirituality and your messages of hope. I'm just wondering, how's it going at Westwood? How are you guys adapting? Things have changed now, right? We're turning the dial.
Yeah, we're turning the dial, but in larger churches, it's pretty challenging because of some of the restrictions, which, you know, we're using a clarity of terms among some of my colleagues on not reopening, but re-entering our facilities because the church never closed, per se, because right. The church is the people of God and our case through faith in Christ. So we don't close. We find new ways to be together, to live like Christ. That's part of our priority. But when the latest guidelines came out for churches to re-enter, we found that it really didn't change much for larger churches. I think smaller, mid-sized churches have a little bit more flexibility. But when it got communicated that 50% capacity is there, but they still limit it to 250, and social distancing and masks and no singing and no kids and got to leave right away, you know, it's difficult because there is a reality in terms of who we are as a culture, the experience that we have that we're trying to retain as well. So we have to be creative in that, and we want to be safe when we do come back. And so we're kind of setting those parameters and what does it mean? And we want to limit the spread of the virus, and we also want to come back together again. We've actually set a date. I don't even know if you heard this. It was just this week, and we're announcing it today in all of our services as well, that we're returning and re-entering Westwood on August 2nd. But churches are coming back. Some have already opened, and more will in different phases as the weeks unfold.
It just seems weird going to a church service without singing. And I understand the medical reasons why, but yeah. Again, I'm always amazed at how people can adapt and pivot and find new ways to worship and to share communion. I'm curious, And I realize every church is different, Joel, but in terms of keeping churches going during these harrowing times, I mean, it's rough for every business, and a church is a business. You have to keep the lights on. You got to pay the rent. You got to pay your people. You have an amazing staff. What advice would you have based on your experience? And I know you've invested in amazing audio visuals so people can stream and watch, you know, previous services online. But how is that going? And are churches going to be able to survive this?
Yeah, I think so. In some ways, Paul, I think we'll actually be stronger. You know, like businesses, churches have to be innovative. We will not be the same when we come back. So we have to embrace the reality of what's here. Peter Drucker said that results are best obtained by seizing opportunities rather than just simply solving problems. And I agree with that. So we have to ask the question, what are the opportunities to be seized? And I think about where we are today, and really there are three groups that are part of our church families. You have the people who wanted to meet yesterday, and you have people who want to come back today, assuming it's safe. And you have those that won't come back for a very, very long time because of health risks or they're cautious for whatever reason. But what opportunities are there to serve each one? I will say this. I was thinking about this earlier this week, and I shared it with our staff. One of the lessons I've learned from this journey is that the church scattered is sometimes more effective in doing what Jesus commissioned for us to do than the church gathered. And you think about what's happening right now, and people are in their homes, they're in their neighborhoods, they're connecting with people and meeting needs in their own, you know, particular sphere of influence, or getting to know people better than they knew them before. I was mindful anecdotally of a couple from our church who had come here 2 years ago from Arizona, and they connected with Westwood in a small group and doing well there. But in terms of their neighborhood, they've never felt like they belong. They've always felt distant and detached. Hmm. And as a result of this, they've been walking their neighborhood. Well, their neighbors have been walking, and now one of their neighbors has a happy hour at 4 o'clock every day, Monday through Friday, which they go to, and they've gotten to know their neighbors, and many of them are without a faith background or a church home, and they are inviting them to join us. So in some ways, if we're intentional and creative, we can do much better during this time. And, you know, that's how the early church was, too, in Acts 1:8, when Jesus gives this commission, you'll receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you and be my witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and the ends of the world. He always called us to be sent into our neighborhoods, here, near, and far. But they stayed here. They stayed in Jerusalem for a very long time. And we have to go to Acts 8:1 to find out that a persecution broke out. And you could say, it says, on that day, a great persecution broke out against the church in Jerusalem. They were scattered throughout the region of Judea and Samaria. You could say, on that great day, a pandemic broke out. And all of a sudden, we are stepping out. We're being sent into our communities and getting to know people that you would think we have gotten to know a long time ago. But in fact, we're just communicating a threefold approach as we come toward August 2nd over the next 6 weeks and doing some creative work in terms of engagement. Because what you're speaking to really is the value of engagement. How do we stay engaged as every week passes and months go by here? And there is concern for churches in terms of that connectivity ability. And so we're launching threefold strategy this week on online communities and then neighborhood gatherings. And then we're going to do something fun for 6 weeks on drive-in worship on Sunday nights to help meet that need of people wanting to be together. And we're going to do that in our cars in our parking lot. We have the benefit of a parking lot, and everybody has that. But we're going to seize that opportunity and have fun with it. And in fact, we have Tom Lehman, who's going to be with us for the professional golfer for Father's Day. And we're going to come back and serve Dad's Root Beer Sunday night and try to have some fun, try to connect with people again. It'll be the first time on our campus, but it'll be in the parking lot.
That's awesome. And who would have thought that drive-ins would make a comeback? But I just had a story in the previous hour, Joel, about Garth Brooks going to 300 drive-in theaters around the United States. That's going to be his next concert. And I say that's creative. Yeah.
That's creative. We have to be innovative, and there's great joy. Good things come out of crises like this if we're intentional, innovative, and, you know, God intended for us to be together. We just find new ways to do it.
Good things happen sometimes when we get out of our comfort zone, and I think all of us now are out of our comfort zone. When we come back, you had a remarkable experience at the Third Precinct. I want to touch on that, and I want to ask you the question that people have been asking me, and I sure don't know. Is racism sin? What does the Bible have to say about that? A conversation with Joel, of course, Joel Johnson, senior pastor at Westwood Community Church, and then we're going to be joined by Reverend Richard Coleman coming up at 10:30 for the rest of the hour. Please stick around on CCO. Paul here, joined by Joel Johnson, senior pastor at Westwood Community Church. And before it burned down, Joel, my understanding is that you had a fairly amazing transformational experience at the Third Police Precinct in Minneapolis. Can you share that with listeners?
Yeah, it was. I mean, the last 2 weeks, Paul, I'm sure you would agree, have been so extraordinary, historic experiences that are completely new. And I've pretty much been in this city for my whole life. But after George was killed, an organization called Transform Minnesota held a Zoom meeting with about 30 pastors, half black, half white. And Reverend Coleman, who will be one of your guests here upcoming, in this hour, but he invited us in that call to stand together and pray together and to meet at 5 p.m. that Wednesday, the very day that the Third Precinct would be burned. And so we did. There were 30, maybe 40 pastors who joined together from the urban core all around the Twin Cities. And we created a perimeter of prayer around the Third Precinct at 5 p.m. We were there for about 3.5 hours. And during that time, it was amazing. We just connected, we prayed, and asked for peace in the time, and we experienced that firsthand. But in the intersection, which, by the way, half an hour after we left, the building was set afire, so maybe we should have stayed all night. I don't know. Wow. But Corey Dean, who heads up a Man Up Club in the city, had the mic. He was in the intersection. He invited black youth to come to the intersection. He spoke words of truth to them. And called on them to be a voice for the future. And he had them get on their knees. What was fascinating is everybody, all the protesters, there had to be 1,000+ of us who got on our knees. And I wish this would have been on the news somewhere, but it would have been quite a shot from on high. Everybody's on their knees. And Corey offered this prayer over them. And then he gave the mic to these young black youth whom he called to the center of the intersection. And there had been just contextually a bit of a drama that had unfolded at Target just across the street. There was a stabbing there of an individual. So it got chaotic for about 20 minutes. They came and told us just to stay calm, stay present. And then they invited these young black youth to come and take the mic and speak to the crowd. This 15-year-old young guy came up and he absolutely wowed the crowd. He was so eloquent. And he said, "Violence is not our way forward." And this is what stood out to me. He said, with everybody tuned in and listening, he had the attention of everybody. He said, "I vow today to live my life as a servant of love." And there was an applause that erupted. And you know, when you step into those words, those are the words of Jesus. This is the way of Jesus, who said that I came not to be served, but to serve. And, you know, I look at the reality of life, and there are two kinds of people that I at least think of. There are here I am kind of people, and there you are kind of people. And here I am kind of people are absorbed with self and agenda. There you are kind of people are absorbed with others and meeting the needs of others and loving others. And we have a God who's a there you are God. And he was at 15 years of age declaring the very promise of what God says, to be there you are people, to be servants of love. And he was so eloquent. I'm telling you, I could hear his voice and see his face as if it had just taken place. And I'm really grateful for that young guy, what he spoke. Yes, that is our way forward.
Joel, I'm always struck by, I mean, we're called, if we see something wrong, to step up and to say something. And as Christians, to try to do what Jesus would do. And so I'm always, you know, when it comes to civil disobedience, Dr. Martin Luther King, I just watched the movie Selma. And again, you see a few thousand people coming over that bridge, you know, black and white. And it struck me as lambs to the slaughter. and yet they were making their point far more eloquently than if they were hurling, you know, Molotov cocktails, taking up arms. I mean, it's stunning to me, and we can and should, when we see injustice, we need to say something. We shouldn't stay silent. But I wanted to ask you specifically about racism, because when I go back and I read the scriptures, at no point, I mean, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. He didn't say, just love the people who look like you and talk like you and act like you. He was pretty adamant about that, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you teed up the question, is racism a sin? And I thought, what an interesting question that is, because, you know, I have an axiom that if we can only get the love thing right, there's no end to what we could be or do for God's glory. It's just we don't always get the love thing right. I don't always get it right, but I want to, and I seek to do that. But sin is the reason why we don't get it right. It's just interesting that you teed it up with that question, because I don't hear people speak about sin much these days. I think it speaks to a sense of judgment, a sense of guilt, or we feel bad, so we use more words more like, I made a mistake. It feels more acceptable to us in some ways. But it truly is sin, and it's not enough to say racism is sinful. And we must get rid of it. The church has really known that for a long time now, and we have verbalized that reality, but the effect hasn't been what we need it to be. If I could take a moment, I just want to speak about what sin is, because it's not part of our everyday vocabulary right now, but sin is any act or thought or state that fails to conform to the moral and spiritual will of God. So sin means, in my understanding, that there is a God, that there is a way and a will and a standard of what's right. And sin means I don't meet that standard. And in our world of biblical theology, we talk about two main types of sin that cause us to fail to fulfill God's intention for us. And the one is called the sin of commission, where we break God's law. That's most familiar to us, that his standard of right, like the Ten Commandments, do not commit murder or adultery or lie, etc. Those things are sins of commission. But there's also sins of omission. And that's the failure to do something that God wants us to do. It's what you were just speaking about, which is just as wrong as purposely violating God's standards of right through, say, the Ten Commandments. In fact, James 14 says, if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. That is, the word sin means it misses the mark of God's intention for us. And when you start to unpack that and think about, well, what is the sin of racism for those who are Christ followers especially, I think at the heart of it, it's the failure of our vocation as the church, that what got made by God got marred by sin, and Christ comes back to remake what got lost. He's brought in a new creation, that he's restoring the old, and he'll consummate that to full in the time to come. And so Jesus, when he comes, he creates this worldwide family, and it's God's model of human life. And it's that DNA that I think we forget, and we fail in our vocation as the church to be that light, that the point of being part of what Jesus calls his family, or to be Jesus' people, was never that we as individuals would simply have a path to heaven. Our focus is so much on our personal salvation that we miss the main point, that it's not about going to heaven, it's about heaven coming to earth, and that our personal and our corporate lives now become small models of this new creation. And God promised to make that a reality decisively through the raising of Jesus from the dead. So I think embracing diversity of Jesus' family is, it should be as normal as reciting the Lord's Prayer, that we meet together at the foot of the same cross. And God brought heaven to earth, and we are to be that light of what it means to be together. And yet we isolate, separate, and unfortunately alienate. Colossians 3:11 says there's no Jew or Greek, male or female, slave or free. And that's what it means, I believe, to put on this new humanity according to the image of the Creator. I think that's what Christ accomplished. I think that's what Paul portrays the United Church to be, all across, you know, traditional boundary lines, ethnic backgrounds. We're to come together because we come together at the foot of the same cross. We get to live that light of unity. I think that's why Paul, or Jesus, prayed for us in John 17, that we would be unified. He knew that we would struggle with this, but this would be the evidence, the very evidence of the risen power of Christ, that the families of the earth are one together through the blood of Christ that has reconciled us to each other and to him so that we can have that relationship with God today. And so, you know, it is a sin, and we say that it's a sin, but we have to go beyond words, which is part of what our next segment is all about here, too. And I'm just grateful that heaven has come to earth. We get to live out the glimpses as we know it through Christ who is in us, and he'll consummate it to be fully realized, this new creation, and that love, joy, and peace will be made complete. But in the meantime, we get to be those agents of change. And when we choose not to be, then I do think we miss the mark of what God intends for us. That's a bit of a long answer to your question, but I think it's a great question. And the fact that you use the word sin, I go, whoa, don't hear that every day. So thanks for bringing it to our attention, Paul.
Agents of change. Joel, I knew you would say that, explain that far better than I ever could in a million years. And you did. And thank you. And stick around, because joining both of us is going to be Reverend Richard Coleman, director of Hope United Community Development Corp., also a pastor on the north side of Minneapolis, a continuation of this dialogue on race and the church next. Paul Douglas posing a rhetorical question, hearts and minds, stressing hearts this morning. How can white churches and predominantly black churches band together to create not only healing, but change, to truly move the dial forward? Joel Johnson from Westwood has been joining me. Westwood Church has been joining me since 10. And now I'm happy and honored to introduce Reverend Richard Coleman, Director of Hope United Community Development Corp., and also pastor at Wayman AME Church on the north side of Minneapolis, a respected leader, leading voice in the Twin Cities, seeking to bring change and hope to our communities. Reverend Coleman, welcome.
Thank you, Paul. Glad to be with you this morning, and Joel.
How are you holding up, sir?
Well, the preacher's language by God's grace. I think I'm driven by the vision and the opportunity we have in the moment to do something constructive for the community and for God's kingdom. And so I'm driven by that, I believe.
Well, I appreciate hearing that. I certainly do. And I know, Joel, you mentioned Sankofa, and that was new to me, and I think it may be new to many of our listeners. But can you both talk a little bit about Sankofa and how that's part of the healing process?
Well, yeah, I'd like to share just a bit about that. Thanks, Paul. And Joel, mm-hmm. you know, just share as you will. Joel and I experienced a Sankofa event a couple of years ago, but the term is a Ghanaian term, and it literally means that it's not taboo to fetch what is at risk of being left behind. Or the iconic image is a bird with its feet pointed forward, progress, but its neck and head facing backwards. And so the idea is there is great value in our past that helps to equip us for the journey ahead. We can't get there without claiming the values of our past. And so that's the Ghanaian idea and concept of Sankofa, and it was incorporated into some experiences here in the United States a number of years ago, and several years ago through Transform Minnesota, an idea of pairing black and white pastors and religious leaders locally here to take a journey south to experience some of the landmarks and some of the significant civil rights monuments and the sites of events that were critical in the civil rights movement, and for us to go back in history and fetch, meaning bring forward with us, what we need in order to be able to move forward. And so we've had three groups that have gone over the last few years. We've been on lockdown, so this year no one went, but I think collectively, Joel, maybe some 60 or so or 75 pastors and leaders have taken these journeys through Transform, and other organizations have done likewise. The Some Christian denominations are using that model as well, and some businesses are even using it.
Yeah, and I would add to that, I mean, Paul, the word that we're using in the Sankofa experience and really a way forward is to proximate, to draw near. And that's hard for us to do, but this experience is a three-day journey. So Richard and I were paired together, and we sat together on the bus the entire time. We ate all of our meals together, and we slept in the same room together. For 3 days, I would call that proximating. You really drew near. And we had deep, deep conversations, to say the least. And I would say that Richard has become a mentor to me, helping me see my own blind spots. But when you journey, and we got to go to places, and like the balcony of the Lorraine Motel where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, so moving, and go to the Civil Rights Museum there and the Legacy Museum. But I think for me, and Richard, it'd be interesting to hear from you as well, the experience we shared together at Birmingham, Alabama. It's a dock where those slaves were, you know, dropped off, and they had survived this horrific trip across the Atlantic and loaded there, and then they walked up to Commerce Street, this hill, to await their auction, and many had to say goodbye to their spouses and their children and their loved ones, and they would never see many of them again, since they were sold to different families. But what they did is had those whom we were paired with, so Reverend Coleman and I joined arm to arm to go up that hill, and he had never been there, as I recall, Richard, you can clarify that, but we made up our way up that hill, and he came face to face with his own legacy and past, and he buckled on his knees to the ground, and I buckled with him, and we just wept together. There's nothing like being with people to gain a deeper understanding of the roots and where we come from that has shaped where we are today. And I think that understanding gives us promise and hope to move forward. But Richard, maybe you share a story as well.
No, thank you. Yes. Yes. Montgomery, Alabama, that incredible port. And no, I had not been there, though I'd been on Sankofa before, had not made that stop. Born in Mississippi, raised till age six, and so I had been accustomed to some of the conditions in the South racially and what that felt like and what it meant, and as a black man, I've experienced it. But I had not taken that walk, and so it was prefaced with a brief presentation on what had transpired in the transatlantic trade experience, where ships sailed from the west coast of Africa, loaded with slaves, packed in like sardines, many of whom perished along the way, were thrown overboard, and then those who survived made it to shore and were taken off the ship and marched in shackles up the hill on Commerce Street to the trading block. And I had never taken that journey. And so Joel and I went, and I think what was so dramatic for me was, in the broader context of going back to fetch what's of value, I could literally feel the pain of my ancestors as I've never felt before. To be in that space intentionally, to sacrifice my own hurt, my own feelings, so that I could better experience and understand the trauma that they must have faced, and that trauma they faced was passed on to their children and their grandchildren, and I'm one of their sons up the road, and that is in me. And I experienced that trauma, and I literally collapsed. I was just overwhelmed with the grief, imagining what it must have been like for people who have suffered the indignity of men and women naked for weeks on end, lying in their own excrement, vomit, some dying, their own loved ones, but those surviving now separated. A woman sold to one trader, another child sold to another. And to face that in my spirit, and to face that, and to say, this cannot be America, was too much. But having a white brother who loves God and with whom I'm traveling this journey with me added a dimension, because I could see that he struggled as he understood more about the pain of an African American, as a white man who had not experienced that, not been exposed to that, not even to the level that I had previously. But now we both knelt on the ground together, sobbing and praying.
Oh, my. I guess what is flashing in my brain right now is how do all of us experience that pain so that there can be a reckoning, a reawakening, so that finally, I mean, this, slavery is America's original sin, and it's a stain that we still have not gotten past. How do we get to the next step? How do we improve as a people and as a nation? And the eyes of the world are on us right now. We have to get this right. When we come back after the break, I want to talk about the One Fund with Reverend Richard Coleman and Pastor Joel Johnson. That's next.
Of a small town boy like me, she's my body, baby. She's my cool, she's my crazy.
Paul Douglas with you on a Sunday morning with some very powerful messages. And if you missed what Reverend Richard Coleman just said in the previous 15-minute segment, you need to listen to that. We all need to absorb that and imagine if that was our family, our heritage, what would our reaction be? You can always go to radio.com, use the rewind, and back it up and listen to what Reverend Coleman had to say. Joined by Reverend Coleman and Reverend Joel Johnson from Westwood, I want to talk a little bit about the One Fund. Reverend Coleman, what do listeners need to know about the One Fund?
Well, thank you, Paul. The One Fund was established by a number of nonprofits and congregations in the Twin Cities to support churches that are serving predominantly African-American congregations and communities in the Twin Cities area. And it was created at the time of the COVID-19 pandemic eruption because we realized early on that African-American people are being impacted more severely than other communities
right.
by this, and that has to do with pre-existing conditions. And so the church came together around the idea of let's make sure our pastors are whole, let's make sure our congregations are whole, and so forth. And so the fund was established, and I'm thankful that either this week or next week, grants will be hitting the street to churches, and I prefer to call them gifts, actually, to our churches so that they can operate into the future. And I'm very thankful for those who have invested into it, including my dear brother, Joel Johnson, and the folk at Westwood, who I think helped to get this thing kicked off with a generous contribution.
Well, that's wonderful. Look, the question that I get from people, regardless of color, is, okay, we have a problem. Maybe we have glossed over that problem. We've painted over the problem, but the rot is lingering, the rot of discrimination and racism. What can people of faith, we're all united, at least as Christians, we're all united in our belief in Christ and that there's something better waiting for us in the afterlife. In this life, on this planet, with what God has instructed us, what can we do to help our brothers and sisters who are in pain right now? What would you suggest, Reverend Coleman, some of the top things that we can do other than listening?
Well, I think the listening is actually the central piece. We're quickly reacting, but what we're reacting to, whether it was Arbery, whether it was Floyd, whomever the case, the person is, it's reflective of our culture. And we've got to repent of a culture that allows police officers to behave as they do, and also to not isolate racism in specific institutions such as law enforcement or the judiciary. Our entire society is stained by this. It's our original sin. And so I believe we need to pay attention to what Joel shared earlier about what is sin. And he made an important and profound distinction between personal salvation and the purpose of personal salvation, which is that we would be the salt of the earth and that we'll be the light in darkness. That is that we have a role to play. And so we need to understand that opposing injustice, specifically that of racism, is not something we can choose to do. If we call ourselves followers of Jesus Christ, it's something we must do. And I think it begins with, first of all, listening carefully to the word, to the centrality of the truth of why Jesus came to reconcile the world unto the Father. I think it begins there. And then taking time to suspend judgment and to understand that even when we saw the young man killed again last night in Atlanta, and we're quick to say, well, he should not have done what he did with the police officers, to understand and remember something that I shared with you in the previous segment about the trauma that I feel. I'm a 67-year-old African-American man who's lived through much, and I've been preaching the gospel since 1973. And it was not until about 20 years ago that I became aware of my own trauma as relates to the pain that is in my heart, in my soul, that I bear every moment of every day. And so there's this internal struggle that every African-American experiences. We're not well because of what we have endured and because there has been a refusal by the communities that define our culture, predominantly the white community, predominantly the white Christian community, to actually deal with the matter from a spiritual standpoint, and then to allow the spirit and our faith to drive us in our behavior as corporate executives, as elected officials, as appointed officials, as pastors, as teachers, to change our own heart, to allow the Spirit of God to show us that we've been changed, we've been saved, so that we can proximate with the pain that Jesus was acquainted with, Isaiah 53, that he's acquainted with grief, and so must we be. And so before we get too quick into moving into projects and programs, the first thing is to understand that there is an iniquity in our land that must be dealt with, and that racism cannot be solved by black people or any people of color. Mm-hmm. It must be solved by white people in partnership with people of color. And so, Paul, I don't want to move too quickly from listening. That's a part of awareness. We move from awareness to learning, and then we engage. It doesn't have to take a year. It doesn't have to take a month. It can happen in a moment, but we've got to go through it.
Paul, I'll add, too, that Richard was, after our Sankofa experience, came and shared the pulpit at Westwood a year ago. I'm so grateful for that gift that he brought. And out of that came what we call the Racial Justice Reconciliation Team. And it has a threefold focus, one, to become aware, and second, to learn, to be educated, and third, to engage. But it starts with listening, because it's the understanding that motivates an action that will bring sustainable change. And if ever there was a huge softball tossed slowly over the plate, it would have to be this, and yet it has been a silent issue in the church. You think it'd be the easiest thing in the world for pastors to clearly and unequivocally condemn rising racism and even anti-Semitism of our day, and yet we're slow to do it. So I think we have to move from silence to be a voice, as Richard communicated.
I'm telling my white friends, and I think I'm right, I hope I'm right, that if you're silent, you're complicit, that all of us have to not only speak up, we have to take a stand, and we have to defend our brothers and sisters of color. This hour has been transformational for me. I hope some listeners feel the same way. Reverend Richard Coleman and Reverend Joel Johnson, thank you both for joining me this morning, and God bless you both in your ministries.
We love you. Stay strong.
Thanks.
Thank you both. Wow. Okay. I'm going to be unpacking that. I encourage you, go to radio.com, rewind, check that out. More with Dr. Michael Osterholm, the latest on COVID-19, next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.